Welcome back to the Cadet Conversations and Coffee Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Collison. This week on the podcast, I have high school social studies teacher Dave Harms. Dave grew up in Alden, Iowa, really enjoyed his childhood there and the small town atmosphere, and that ultimately led to him starting his teaching career at Alden High School. Dave came over to Iowa Falls Alden High School in 2004 and has been teaching history ever since. We talked a lot about Dave's path to teaching, his interest in history, and how his gamification style lessons have really led to an interest in this with the students. And we also talked about his passion for athletics and his coaching career. I hope you like the episode of the podcast. And if you do like what you're hearing on the pod, please give us a like, follow, subscription, or give us a positive review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks and enjoy the show. All right, I'm here with high school social studies teacher Dave Harms. Thanks for coming on the pod, Dave.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Dave, you are joining the ranks of the podcast guests I've had that taught me in school. And so, remember, this podcast is about you. It's not about what kind of student I was. If you have any bad stories, you don't need to share that with the audience. This is about you and not about what it was like for me as a student. So, I'm really thankful to get to work with you now. You know, I knew you as a teacher, and now I get to know you as a colleague, and that's pretty cool.
So you want me to talk about when you ruined the simulation that one time?
I don't
even bring that up.
I don't want you to bring that up.
And I'm
on the record saying that it was Todd Rainey and John Ray who ruined the simulation. I just happen to be a part of the Axis powers that ruined the simulation.
Book forthcoming.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. I love it. So first, just tell us a little bit about your family, where you grew up, and how your childhood was.
Well, my story kind of starts in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I was born in Cedar Rapids, and at 2 weeks old, I was adopted. And Earl and Cheryl Harms were my parents, and I came to Alden, like I said, at about 2 weeks old. And first place I went into, because my mom was actually the high school secretary at Alden High School for Mr. Bollinger at the time. And so that was the first place they brought me. And so I was in Alden High School pretty early, like that's the first place I went into is what my mom told me. But so that I came to Alden, lived out in the country for I think 4 years. And then we moved to town to where my mom lives today. And you know, it's a small town. Everybody's pretty familiar with it, but it was really different. I mean, you knew everybody and you knew where they worked and you knew this is their house and these are their kids. And, you know, and it's so different today. You sure. know, small towns are kind of not small towns anymore. So I grew up there, went to school there all through high school, went to Ellsworth Community College for my first 2 years, and then transferred to UNI, went there for 3 years. So it took me 5 years to get my degree, but I had 155 credit hours.
Oh, wow.
My degree is in history teaching education, and I also have a political science minor and a coaching minor degree. And so that took a little longer sure. to get.
I bet you got to take some really cool, unique classes, getting the poli-sci as well.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed, you know, I've always loved history, but I like the angle of political science as to why things happen. Mm-hmm. And that's always been kind of a love for me. So taking political science classes was always kind of interesting, I thought. And then, of course, I loved the history classes. But I was kind of a late bloomer as far as education goes. I kind of screwed off for quite a few years before I figured out that maybe that was the ticket out of manual labor.
Sure. Join the club. I was in a similar boat where I took 5 years to get my teaching degree and, you know, bounced around a little bit. And I can remember feeling like, man, am I behind? But then you start to look around and lots of people, you know, who are in college, they change their majors, they test things out. You know, I think what's cool is you did find your way to teaching, and that's awesome.
When I first, I wanted to teach, I was going to be a PE teacher. Mm-hmm. And
PE teachers have it so nice.
Yeah.
They get to wear shorts. Yeah. They get to play fun games. Oh, it's awesome.
Well, I wanted to coach.
Sure.
I knew that. And, when I got to college, I took some classes over at Ellsworth because you had to take your general ed classes, with Irv Miller, mm-hmm. Took some government classes and some history classes. And, you know, I really liked him and I liked the way he taught. And I really started to think, you know, this is really interesting stuff, you know, and I kind of felt that way in high school. Although my high school, you know, I didn't, how do I say this? My, the way I teach and the way I was taught is very different. Mm-hmm. We were the, you know, the projector, and our teacher figured out he could write the notes out and roll them. And then the next year he could just roll them back again.
The overhead.
But so it wasn't too exciting, but, I kind of, you know, started thinking, you know, dates and names are, you know, they're kind of important, but the why is really the important part.
Absolutely.
So I thought, you know, we need to know those things, but we also need to know these other things, which is kind of interesting because that's kind of with standards. That's kind of where we're at.
Absolutely.
Now. So I kind of saw history as being a really interesting, a long-term career. I really felt that I would get bored.
Yeah.
If I did the PE thing, no offense to PE teachers, especially you winners. But
Greg Winters, we got to get him on the pod at some point. He's at the elementary now, but I love that. Yeah. Greg's does an awesome job.
So going back to that, so that's where I ended up, and I ended up going to UNI and got really into it there. And so that's kind of, it's kind of how my growing up, my teaching career, my mom and dad were great. They really supported me. My grandma, Emma Harms, she really supported me a lot. She was one of those ladies that says, I'm going to help you, but don't tell nobody.
Absolutely.
Well, that, she told that to everybody.
Grandmas are great.
Right. Yeah. You know, and she helped me get through, and my parents helped me. And so kind of on an entry, you know, I said I was adopted. Mm-hmm. I met my birth mom when I was 32 years old. I was actually going through a divorce, and it was kind of my midlife crisis.
Sure.
And when I met her, it was a huge game changer for her.
Yeah.
Because she was from Cedar Rapids, and I was born in 1969. In 1971, she moved to Las Vegas. And it always kept her name in the phone book, thinking someday I would, you know, when I was 18. Well, I'm 32.
Yeah.
So 14 years passed. But I did end up finding her and her family. And it was great. It was a wonderful side. My father's side wasn't so good because he didn't claim me, but that's another story. But, it really turned out to be a wonderful thing. She's been passed now for quite a few years, but just having that time together.
Yeah.
Sammy actually was, I think she was 3 weeks old when she passed, but got to hold her.
That's cool.
And I'll never forget that. You know, that was a tough night, the last night we saw her, because she was in the hospital for about a year.
Sure.
That's kind of how I grew up.
Well, that's awesome. And I think it's cool to, you know, share your story of, you know, reconnecting with your birth mom. And I'm really happy that you got to have that, because you hear so many stories like that where that doesn't happen. And I bet that was great for you and your family. That's awesome. And I think, you know, you mentioned going way back. You said the first place you got brought to was the Alden School. And if you know Dave Harms, you know that this guy just has so much pride for his community and his school. And I think it's fitting that that's kind of how it started, you know, was right then and there. You know, I love your story too, coming to how you got into teaching. It's not unlike some of the other guests we've had where, you know, maybe it wasn't necessarily or history teaching at least wasn't necessarily what you wanted to do right away, but you're right. It's cool to know the dates and names, but it's really cool to think about, hey, why did this happen? Will it happen again? And I know you have talked about that with me at like staff development when we're talking about our content areas. You know, you say all the time, hey, the quote, history repeats itself. That's not just a cliche. I mean, let's think about why this happens. And so it's cool that you get to share that with your students.
Yeah, I really enjoy teaching history. And, you know, I've had some administrators say, well, why don't you get your administrative degree or whatever and stuff? And I'm like, I love what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I just don't want to do.
Yeah.
I don't want to do something else. Maybe someday if I get sick of doing this, mm-hmm. I might want to do that, but I don't want to stop coaching either.
Yeah.
So I feel, even though I'm going to be 52 next month, I still feel like I'm 25 as far as, you know, my mindset about, I'm not really looking to try to slow down. You know, I'd really like to speed up actually. In that department. So I'm not counting the days to my retirement by any stretch of the imagination.
So you had talked about how your history teacher at Alden, maybe taught a little bit differently than the way you teach. What else did you like and dislike as a high school student?
Well, I must not have liked homework because I was not a very good student. Oh my God. And then that's my senior year. I got an academic letter and I was, you know, I took a harder math class than I would have.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where it took me to the next level, saying, okay, this is what I want to do. That's when I started to have a goal.
Yeah.
I wanted to be challenged.
Yeah.
And that's when I started thinking about, I want to go and I want to teach and I definitely want to coach, because I think, which is weird because I was kind of the quiet, shy guy going into my senior year where I would not say much, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which is kind of probably, my guys listen to this and think, wow, that's not what we hear when we go to a football game or a track meet. But, and with teaching too, I mean, I'm scared to death to get in front. When I took speech and I didn't take speech in high school. I took speech in college. I had to. And was just terrified to get up in front of people. And now, you know, like when the Lions Club asked me to speak or whatever, and it feels so natural, probably because I do it every day. But that was something I had to get over, because you couldn't do what we do.
Yeah.
And be afraid to get up in front of people.
You can't. And I tell people that all the time. It's the ultimate people person job. And, you know, you come into contact with all these different types of kids and personalities. But then at the end of the day, you're also almost performing, you got to remember what your content is, and you got to adjust when things aren't going well. This isn't really working. And, but what I loved about your story of what you liked and disliked, you sound so much like some of our students, you know, who, they maybe think they have it all figured out until they have that epiphany of, okay, maybe I want to do something different. And I think that we all need to remember that, like, teachers, we were all like the kids at one point, you know, we were just like them, you know, and we didn't know what we wanted to do. And then we figured it out, you know?
Yeah. And it doesn't happen just in high school or just in college even. I mean, it can happen after that.
Yeah.
But I was lucky that I figured out what I wanted to do. And the fact that I'm still doing it 28 years later, and still enjoying it, I think I picked right.
Absolutely. So one thing I got to ask you about, because any former student of yours will have known this experience, at least in my time, the simulations, the history simulations. Every year got to be one of the junior class's favorite activities they do. And I can remember specifically being a sophomore on the bus going to a game, and I look in the back of the bus in basketball season, and there's like five juniors just like huddled around each other, and they are just looking at something and they're analyzing it and they're like pointing at the board and they're like yelling at each other. And I was like, what are they doing? And someone was like, oh, they're talking about the World War II simulation in Mr. Harms's class. And from then I knew this thing was going to captivate me and many of my classmates. So you gotta give us the brief overview of what the simulation is, and then tell us where you came up with that.
Well, that story kind of goes back to my student teaching. I was a student teacher to Bob Hilmer. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know him.
I know Bob Hilmer.
Yeah, he's a legendary basketball coach.
All-time leader in wins in Iowa.
And so he was my cooperating teacher up in Forest City. And he had this little simulation with these little, there were six little fictitious countries. And you had there was some kind of conflict going on. And you had to either say you were going to war or you made a peace agreement or whatever. And so I kind of took that idea, which is a pretty famous one across the internet. And I said, well, what if we use the real countries?
Yeah.
What if we had a map? And what if we gave them armies that were that size? And what if, you know?
Yeah.
And it just kind of, as we kept doing it, kids would come up with ideas. One kid came up with we're gonna make up alliance slips. And so they could actually physically sign them. And that was a big deal.
That was cool.
You know, and it's all these things that kind of built upon itself. You know, I never imagined it would turn into a business and turn into something that's being done all over the world.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy, but that's where it initially started.
Yeah. And one thing that is so cool about it for all the students from IFA or Alden or wherever who've been in your class, one of the things they know is not only is it it's a gamification of like the World War I and World War II, but it's also a way to learn, you know, cause there are objectives and you need to reflect on the objectives, and the objectives all connect to what happened actually in history and why it happened. And I can remember specifically, like, I was so excited for the game part of it, but then I was also like, man, I'm also thinking a lot. Like, you know, oh, man. And you're thinking about how all that stuff connected.
And not just in class.
No. Oh, man. And sometimes the other teachers are sitting there going, hey, they're looking at the simulation stuff and they need to be studying Spanish or math or English or whatever. But and you walk down the hall and you see like five students huddled around a map or something. And but then you also got to know as a teacher, there's got to be a sense of pride knowing that your kids are hooked. And it's always cool when you get your kids to really be engaged in an activity like that.
Well, and I've kind of done a little bit of unofficial research on the differences between test scores from units we do that have simulations and units that don't. And the test scores are at least a grade higher.
Really?
Just because kids are now interested to the point where they want to know what really happened.
Yeah.
And they want to know how theirs was different from what, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just getting that interest level gets back to, you know, trying to go a mile deep instead of a mile wide. And with such important events like that, getting them interested just opens up a whole new avenue to learn more about the topic that you're discussing, which is whatever, you know, simulation you're doing. So I'm kind of proud of that.
I would be too. And I think it's probably as time has gone on and technology has advanced, you've probably been able to add things to it. And, you know, really, I can remember back when you initially had to do it, you had the projector on, you had the presentation open, but it was kind of a, I have to plug it in one by one. And, I can remember when I came back to teach, I was talking to you about the simulations and you're like, it's way different now. It's on another level. You were pretty excited about that.
Oh yeah. Once I paid a programmer to build a program that would, you know, we just drag things into place and it automatically does it for me now. But before I had two computers going, one with a map being projected, yeah. The other one with my spreadsheet. And the whole time I was like putting stuff in because declarations of war were coming up and I had to talk to this person. And I never got to enjoy it because I was constantly typing in new stuff.
And kids were so excited. So they're like yelling stuff at you and you're like, wait, like, let me put this in. And like now, like you said, now you get to see them have those aha moments. So it's a better process.
Oh, it's way more fun.
And I will tell you that the simulations definitely have a lasting impact because I was with a few of my friends, a year ago at a wedding and we're sitting there at the wedding and it's 10:30 at night. And we're talking about the simulation, you know? So like, I mean, and I don't know how we got there. You know, I'm sure we got there some way of, you know, the guys say, who's still teaching? And I say, oh, you know, Mr. Sauerbrei, Mr. Uhlenberg, Mr. Harms, do you remember Harms' simulation? And we're still talking about it. So, and I would echo that a lot of other students probably feel the same way. So that's definitely one of the lessons or experiences I remember from high school. So.
Well, that's always been kind of the idea. If you have a lesson that's being talked about at class reunions and weddings and things like that, you've gone pretty deep.
Absolutely.
That's permanent learning right there.
I totally agree. So I know that you're really busy with, teaching and coaching and having kids and stuff. And I always ask this question and usually the response is what free time, but what do you love to do in your free time?
Well, I live on an acreage, so that's plenty of work by itself.
Yeah.
I like to do home improvement stuff that I can handle. I like to garden. Got a lot of landscaping to do in the yard, of course, and always doing projects. Built a patio fire deal behind the barn and did a lot of COVID work during this last spring. Yeah. Cleaned my barn up so it's unrecognizable almost.
So are you saying that you could have your own HGTV show?
Feel like it sometimes.
We could call it the history of the home and you can always have a history lesson as well.
Well, there's always something to do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, that's what I do a lot of work. I do, like most people, I do a lot of building things like schoolwork things and work with my website and stuff. I mean, that's an hour every morning. And as I get older, I seem to be getting up earlier. I get up at like 4:30 in the morning.
Hey, there you go.
Ridiculous. And but, still can't get everything done.
But just naturally hop awake, huh?
Oh, once I get up, I cannot go back to sleep. It's terrible.
There you go.
So I like to watch TV.
Yep.
I'm really into House of Cards right now.
Yeah.
You know, Frank's dead and everything. So it's, or Francis, sorry.
Yep.
And so when I was a kid, I watched a lot of TV.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was just the way it was. My dad watched a lot of TV. I watched a lot of TV. So that's kind of how I like to relax. Mm-hmm. And Netflix, of course, has been wonderful. Binge watching, you know, or I remember back in the old, it's so funny. The kids look at you and like, what? Well, back in the old days, you had to wait till next week to see the next, you know.
And then you had commercials, right, that you had to wait through and all that stuff.
Because everybody was watching the same show. Yeah. So there's no way you could just, I'm going to watch the whole thing at once. Well, no, because everybody's talking about it.
Absolutely. And Seinfeld, yeah, you know? Seinfeld became the show that you sit at the water cooler and you're talking about. Do you love the Drake? Love the Drake. Hate the Drake. You know, all that stuff. I said that one of my friends asked me about in fantasy football, should I play Kenyon Drake? And I said, hate the Drake. And he kind of looked at me like, what? And I'm like, you don't get it, dude. You're not a Seinfeld fan. But anyway, TV's changed a lot.
Oh, my gosh. Sure.
Now it's almost like there's so much to go through that you can't even pick what to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Netflix just added that Play Me Something button. I don't know if you've seen that. Huh. You just click it and it plays something based on what you've watched and what you've rated. And I'm like, this was a great invention because it just starts something up.
Yellowstone's another one.
I heard that show's really good.
It's really awesome. You have to go back to the beginning and watch it. But if anybody ever says they're taking me to the train station, I'm going to take off running.
So I gotta watch that
you
show.
You got to watch that show.
I got to watch that show. So you love TV. I also know that you are a diehard Green Bay Packers fan.
Oh, yeah.
Where did that fandom come from?
Well, you know, this isn't like a great story, but when I was a little kid, I got a bag that said Green Bay Packers. I think it was around 1971.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so this was just right after all the great stuff happened, because I was born right after all the great stuff happened.
Sure.
So I got a bag, and that was my number one team, and the Lions were my number two team. And so that's really, I wish I had a better story for that, but it was a bag.
Sometimes that's all I need. All we need is like Brandon Uhlenberg said his Cleveland Indians fandom came from like his parents or his grandparents. But then I think his Patriots fandom came from something like like there was a starter jacket and he was like, hey, that's my team. And, people have similar stories, but then it became your team. And now, you know, I sit here and talk with you about the Green Bay Packers, and you know everything there is to know about their history. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. My wife and both my sons and my daughter were all Packers fans. Mm-hmm. Sammy's a little shaky, but
she's got a little Vikings blood, or what?
I don't know. The Vikings thing, I don't like them at all.
Yeah. So if I had to ask you, Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre? Who's your guy?
Aaron Rodgers. Yeah.
He's pretty
simply
special.
Because of the interceptions.
Yep.
I loved Brett Favre. He played for years with not a lot around him, and we still won.
Yeah.
So I love Brett Favre. Yeah. Total. He was a wild man. Probably one of the best there ever has been. But Aaron is what I would want. Well, that and Bart Starr. That's what I would want Matthew to be like.
Sure.
Just because of he can throw so many different ways. Both Brett and Aaron are like that.
Yeah.
They don't have a set. They can switch up the way they throw it depending on the situation they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important. I think you can't just get, okay, this is the only way you can throw. You know, they have so many different ways. And as we know through the years, you've seen some pretty weird throws from both of them.
Yeah.
But Aaron, he's not obsessed with getting the ball in a small window.
Sure.
You know what
he
I mean?
He says, I can't get
it's
it
a
in
total
there.
Total team guy.
I'm going to throw it away as the play right now, or I'm going to take the sack. I'm going to slide.
Yeah. He's not as unpredictable, but he's so smart.
Yeah.
You know, and he knows the offense now, which has made him even more dangerous.
Oh, for sure. He's having an MVP year right now. And, you know, a lot of people talk about Aaron Rodgers as, you know, maybe they say Tom Brady is the greatest because of his championships. But as you know, football is such a team sport. You know, quarterback can't play defense. Quarterback can't throw to guys if they're not open, you know. But a lot of people feel like maybe Aaron Rodgers is the most talented to ever throw the ball. But now people are saying this guy down south, Pat Mahomes, might be the guy that can make the toughest throws. Who can make the more impressive throws, Aaron Rodgers or Pat Mahomes?
Well, you know, yesterday Mahomes didn't have such a good day.
No, he didn't.
And if you look at even when Brady, you know, was throwing all those touchdowns, I think Aaron's got, 44 touchdowns and 4 interceptions.
It's amazing.
You know, that's just
his. There was a stat at one point before the Tampa Bay game this year where he had only had 2 pick sixes in his whole career. And it was just like, because his interception number is just so low compared to every other guy that's played.
And he's not afraid to just throw it out of bounds.
No.
You know, because, you know, he's not obsessed with, because it's, and, you know, yesterday I was watching an interview that Brett Favre did, and they were talking about the MVP and who would get it. And he had an interesting take on it. He goes, you know, a lot of people just vote on statistics, but he says, what I think you have to do is look at who is the guy, if you take that guy out of off that team, what happens to them?
Most valuable.
Yeah. Right?
If you define most valuable.
It's not about who's most yards or most touchdowns. He says, who is the guy you take away from that team and they drop?
Well, and it's become such a quarterback award that like that same rationale, you know, if you took a guy like Aaron Donald away from the LA Rams defense, what do they become? You know, so I agree. I think that rationale and to say, and this kind of will lead into a question we're going to ask later, to say like best football player, football is such a different sport from like, you know, basketball. Cause like I said, you can't play both sides of the ball or you may be elite at your position, but your position is nose tackle and your job is to eat up blocks and stop the run, you know? And so your numbers might not be as high as someone else, but you know, that's where football is just kind of a fun game like that. You know, going back to the Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers thing, how do you feel they handled that transition from Favre to Rodgers?
Well, I don't think there was a good way to handle it. And the reason I say that is because Favre was so unpredictable. I mean, he retired.
Yep.
You know, at some point you had to move on.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And once, you know, him coming back, because I've been in this position, he felt betrayed.
Yep.
He felt like you guys don't appreciate what I've done. And of course, he has a great perspective of what he did.
Sure.
He changed the Packers from being the worst place to go in the NFL to the best place to go in the NFL.
Absolutely.
And he was hurt by that. Mm-hmm. They made amends, but I just don't see how they could have done it. You know, at some point he had to go. And then of course, I don't think he would have done, cause he did some things with the Jets and he did some things with the Vikings. I don't know if he would have done those things at Green Bay because he was so motivated to prove them wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't think he would have been as motivated at Green Bay to do that. He would have been just hanging on.
Yeah. And in the NFL, you either have a franchise quarterback or you don't. And so Green Bay, kind of similar to what they did this past draft by drafting Jordan Love, if you have the guy you know you want to get, you want to get him in your system and organization. And they drafted Aaron Rodgers and he sat for the beginning of his career, but they knew that was the guy they wanted. And look at them. They've been pretty lucky to not have any quarterback controversy for about 30 years, probably.
Look at the Bears. Yeah. They have like 36 quarterbacks.
They would kill for a guy like that. Yeah, absolutely. So there's no secret. I mean, the teams that win consistently have consistency at that spot. So,
right.
Yeah. Okay. So we always ask on every podcast, we do a category called Mount Rushmore. And a Mount Rushmore list is an all-time group of some category. It's like the best or the most important or most special. It's not a ranking necessarily, but there are 4 because there's 4 faces on Mount Rushmore. And with yours, I knew exactly what question I wanted to ask you. For anyone who knows you, they know you as kind of, I think you've actually even referred to yourself as the gatekeeper to the history of Alden High School football. And I think that's so cool. And before we get to your list, I think that's cool. I was talking with Brandon Uhlenberg about this in his podcast. He's from Fredericksburg, Iowa, which is a small town, and they joined with Sumner. And I think it is cool that you know the history of Alden High School football so well, because there are a lot of people that means a lot to, you know, I've taken some notes from you in the way that I've tried to honor some of that tradition as the basketball coach here, and to think about that. And so I first just want to say, like, I think that's really cool. And so I knew that my Mount Rushmore question for you had to be, give me your Mount Rushmore, however difficult this may be, of the 4 best Alden High School football players in the history of Alden High School football. And there's nobody who knows this category better than you.
Yeah, when you told me that was going to be a question, I thought it would be fun to post that on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of, it didn't get heated, which I was glad, but we had a lot of people talking. And one of my old assistant coaches, Tyler Jass, texted me, and it was funny because he had the same list as I did.
Yep.
And of course he had himself on the list, but he said, but that last one's questionable. And I laughed. But it was kind of interesting though, that we kind of had this, and you know, in high school football, especially going way back, like you talked about how the NFL, it's more of a quarterback award for MVP.
Sure.
In high school football, it's more of a running back.
Absolutely.
Award, depending on, you know, what era or whatever, but you can definitely tell who would you take off that team, and you know, it would not be the same.
Yeah.
So I came up with my four.
And so go through each one and talk a little bit about why.
My first one was easy. Randy Schultz. He was a second team All-Stater for the Little 10, because we had two divisions, the Big 10 and the Little 10, of all. And think about how many high schools we had back then. Oh, my gosh, a lot. But he had somewhere in the realm of, I don't know, over 5,000 all-purpose yards in high school. Three-time All-Conference, second team All-State, like I said, and third team his senior year. Undefeated as a junior, went to UNI.
Yeah.
Of course, freshmen couldn't play back then, but started sophomore, junior, senior year. When I went to UNI, my advisor was the UNI line coach from back in the 60s when Randy Schultz was there.
Yeah.
Don Arusha. Oh, God, I love that guy. I would just go in there. Normally, you know how it is. Your advisor at college, you might not ever meet him.
Oh, never. Yeah. Especially at a bigger, I went to a small school and I very rarely saw mine. I can't imagine what it was like at a bigger college.
Well, mine had his own office at the PC, and I would go in there all the time, because once he found out I was from Alden, oh, he was telling me Randy Schultz stories all the time.
That's awesome.
You know, and we were like, you know, in like Flint. So he's got to be my number one. Two-time first team All-American. MVP of the Pecan Bowl. My dad went to that game.
Did he play in the NFL?
Yeah, and then he had played three years in the NFL. I think his knee blew out at the end. And I got to know his son Ryan really well.
Who's the head basketball coach at Cedar Falls?
Yeah, so, well, they don't do very good. They've only won like three state.
They're an unbelievable program. And it's funny. I was actually at the IBCA clinic, and I wanted to make sure I listened to him speak. He was speaking about, you know, building a youth program and a culture. And so I heard him speak, and, you know, I went up to him and I just introduced myself, and I said, hey, Coach Schultz, my name is Michael Collison. I'm the head basketball coach at Iowa Falls Alden. And right away, he just, you know, it perked up. Like, there was that Alden connection. And I said, I'm pretty sure you know one of our history teachers, Dave Harms. And he right away said, oh, Coach Harms, love that guy. And so I think that's cool that you were able to get to know his son too, and learn some of that history of what, you know, he was like as a guy, as a person too, not just as a football player.
Yeah, I went when I was doing the project of making the website and stuff, and I had contacted him, long story short, weird way around, but his wife and one of my friend's wives were in the same class at a reunion, so then they met there, and then I was like, well, I want to meet this guy.
Yeah.
And so I went to his house, and he pulled out of the closet these huge totes just full of newspaper clippings and everything. You know, this is just like when Indiana Jones walks in and sees the Ark of the Covenant.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, it could, I think it was glowing.
Yes. And so for you, you were like, this is what I need. And he just let you go at it. Huh?
Oh, I was just overwhelmed. He sent it home with me.
That's cool.
Which I lived in fear the whole time. Because I thought, what if my house burns down? And you know, all this stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, getting to know him was really cool. But he is definitely my number one, because there was a lot of good athletes on his team. I think there was like five or six honorable mention all state, which was really a bigger deal then. And so he was obviously number one, because he's the only one that's played in the NFL, you know, and that just tells you. So that's kind of going to be a trend here.
Yeah.
And not that college sports are everything, but when you go and be successful on a national level, that's saying something.
Absolutely.
To me. And so no dissing to my former players, because I got a lot of All-State football players, but these guys were all Americans.
Yep.
And so I had to go with, and it's kind of all old school, but
yeah, for sure.
My second one is Gary Nelson. Gary Nelson went to Wartburg, was a first team All-American running back there. This is going to be a little controversial, but back in the day in high school football, Radcliffe owned the All-State selections. Really? A guy named Black, Coach Black. And this is a story I've been told anyway. And no Alden players got through, because we had a quarterback, Chris Kate, that threw for 1,700 yards in 1967.
Wow.
You cannot tell me that there was somebody impressive. Better than him.
Yeah,
that he didn't impressive. Even get honorable mention. So that was kind of a shady deal. But they went on. He went to Upper Iowa and played quarterback really well. Gary went to Wartburg, was an All-American first team, had all kinds of yards. You know, there's not a whole lot of stats from that era because a lot of stuff gets thrown away. But, yeah, that's pretty special when you can do that. You know, Wartburg played a lot bigger schools back then too, so it wasn't like it is now. Not that they don't play big schools, but not like back then.
Well, I played small college basketball, and I'll tell you, the guys who were All-Americans at our level would have been Division I basketball players. You know what I mean? Like, they were good enough to play Division I, and they just happened to be at a smaller school. And now, I don't know I don't think they would have been All-American maybe at that level, but like Jake Shipley, who was one of my teammates, was a first-year All-American. He definitely could have played at UNI or some of those other places. And good players are good players. So if he was a first-team All-American there, he had to be a stud. And, you know, kind of going back to what you said about the stats of that era, that's one thing when I was beginning my journey of collecting all this stuff about cadet basketball, I asked you about, you know, what was your process? And that was one of the first things you said is you said, I take anything anyone will give me, but sometimes you got to be prepared to just not find anything. And that is frustrating when you're trying to find that data. So who's your third one?
So number three was my dad's best friend, Harm Jass. And he was a four-time first-team all-conference football player.
Wow.
Which was back when they were in the Mid-States Conference with State Center and all those teams. Alden was probably lower end of that conference as far as school size. That is impressive by itself. And he got a full ride offer to go to Iowa.
Oh, wow.
So... and he was Randy Schultz's idol as a football player.
Really?
He wanted to be like Harm Jass.
That's
cool. That's enough for me.
Yeah.
And I know because my dad, you know, and everything, and I grew up with them. They were in our card club and loved the guy. Yeah. And so that, not that that played into my choices, but it was just pretty obvious to me. This was a special player, even though we don't have any stats.
Yeah.
Some of the stories I heard about, I mean, he was just a tough football player.
Yeah.
Play both ways, of course. And that was a cool thing about Randy too, because Randy, and they had so many injuries, he was playing both ways.
Yeah.
In college football.
Wow.
That's pretty unheard of even back then.
Oh yeah.
But that tells you what kind of athlete they were.
Definitely. And it's cool. I love the story about how Randy Schultz, who you consider to be one of the greatest players, looked up to this guy. And I think that kind of gets lost in high school sports these days is, and maybe it's because of the internet and social media and how easy it is for young kids to have access to like pro players or, you know, major Division I. But I can remember being a kid and, you know, everyone wanting to be like the best high school players, you know, and it was like, that's who you wanted to be. And I also I think that's kind of cool. That's kind of a special thing. And maybe that's just the way that the world is changing. Or maybe that was a thing about small town America, like you talked about. But
yeah. And, you know, it gets harder. The bigger you get, I think the harder and the less connection there is to the back, because you have lots of new families that come in.
Yeah.
They don't know the stories of the past. And so kind of keeping those alive a little bit is kind of something I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
That's my number three.
Yeah.
My number four was my assistant coach at Alden, Tyler Jass.
So he did make the list.
He made the list. He made his own list too, of course. But he did make my list too, because he was the first. So he was a senior in the fall of 1978. He was the first team All-Stater that Alden had. Wow. And we started playing football in 1928. So through that whole time, for that whole time period, he was the only one.
Yeah.
And so he also got a full ride to go to Iowa State. And I think he played there 1 or 2 years.
And this is back when, like you had talked about being a first-team All-Stater, that Alden would have been in the same class as some of the schools that are a lot bigger than them, you know?
Oh, yeah. It was 1A back then. Only eight. They made it to state that year, his senior year. And there were only eight teams that made the playoffs then.
My father-in-law went to Emmitsburg High School and was coached by his dad and would have been around the same time. And he had talked to me about that. Only eight teams make it. And
you pretty much had to be undefeated.
Exactly. He said it was so much harder to make the postseason. Oh. And like that was at Emmitsburg, and they were in the same class as like Urbandale. And so I'm sure, so like Alden, I mean, that would have been, that's to be a first team All-Stater from Alden, Iowa in that time. That's a huge accomplishment for Tyler Jass. Tyler. So what was he like as a player?
I played with his brother, who was 2 years older than me, and he was probably the best football player, Herman Jass, that I ever saw. Mm-hmm. All the guys that I picked, I really didn't see. I was at the games, but I was in the end zone playing football.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I didn't really watch the football games because I was like 8 years old.
That's what I did. My brother and dad were part of the best basketball teams the school's ever had, and I played tag for most of it. Yeah, I was out in the student center playing tag. Yep.
That's just the way it was. Yeah. And I had, as a coach, I had 5 first team All-Staters, mm-hmm. and none of them are on my list.
Wow.
And they were good athletes that I always say played great football.
Yeah.
And there are lots of guys that I just couldn't just pick one of them, because it was kind of a team effort. It really was.
Yeah. Well, that's hard too as a coach. You know,
yeah,
I'm gonna pick one of these guys. Well, I'm gonna leave 4 off.
I'm the guy in 2000 who didn't vote for himself and didn't get district coach of the year because I didn't vote for myself.
Yeah.
And my other compadre did vote for himself.
Yeah,
he got it.
Yeah,
ahead of me. And I know my assistant thought that was dumb, but I just couldn't do it.
Yeah,
you know, I don't think if you're nominated, I don't think you should be voting.
Because
it's not because some guy's gonna be like me. It's like, I'm not gonna vote for myself. That's weird.
Yeah, it's a weird position.
Yeah, it is. So, but you know, those guys, they did an awesome job. But those are the 4 best. And I have no question in my mind that there are other guys that were awesome and I could do a top 10.
They're also deserving.
But I'm not going to.
So there you go. I think that's okay. You know, of the guys you coached, who would be some of those names of those guys who were really special players for you?
Ryan Dillon, first team All-State linebacker, Iowa Newspaper Association, second team All-State quarterback, same year.
Wow.
Des Moines Register. Joey Johnson, first team All-State Des Moines Register and Iowa Newspaper Association, wide receiver. Glenn Vandervoort, first team All-State, tackle. Who's the other one?
I remember seeing, always seeing pictures of Glenn Vandervoort when we would practice at Alden in middle school. And I was like, that is a big dude.
Oh, he was tall.
Especially at a school like Alden, you know,
he was like, he was ridiculously smart too.
That's good.
Ryan Smuck was the other one.
I know Ryan.
First team All-State wide receiver and a great defensive player. And all those guys played both ways. I think that year in 2000, there were like 7 guys that were on offense, defense, and every special team.
Wow.
So they never came off the field. Only 18 guys in the whole team. So yeah.
It's kind of a cool thing about small town Iowa, you know, like, hey, I know this is hard, but we need you to do it.
Right. Because
if you don't do it, we're gonna get beat. And so cool for those guys to kind of, you know, be tough and get it done.
And that was kind of an interesting situation because I had to get paid as a coach. I had to do junior high, and you'll think this is kind of weird, but we had an hour and 10-minute athletic period in junior high the end of the day. So sports was during school. And so then after school, I would go to high school practice. So I would start coaching at like 2:30 and get done like at 6.
Oh, wow.
So I coached them in junior high, and they were like 1-4 in junior high. And then I also coached them in JV because they cut our staff from 3 to 2. So Coach Jass and I did the JV all the way up through high school because we only had two coaches at the time. Then we ended up getting one volunteer, but
that's kind of cool.
We went all the way through.
You worked with those guys the whole way.
And oh,
you,
yeah.
You saw a lot of progress.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Well, I think those are great stories. And like I said, if you ever have questions about Alden football history, Dave Harms is the guy, you know? And I did have a little time to look at that Facebook post that you made where you were kind of opening it up. And I thought it was really cool how many people responded and, you know, and said, you know, this guy was a great player. You can't have the list without him, you know? And I think that is cool that there's so many people who still feel that connection and can remember those players. You know, I'm a big believer of you got to make it big time wherever you're at, whether you're a high school coach or a middle school coach or whatever. And, you know, clearly for a lot of people, Alden football was big time. And I think guys like you are a big reason why. And so, you know, there may not be Alden Redskin or Alden Red Hawk football anymore, but there's a lot of great memories because people like you are keeping them alive. And that's cool. Definitely why you're a history teacher as well.
Oh, yeah.
The context,
I enjoy it for sure.
Awesome. So let me ask you this. If you didn't teach and you could do anything you wanted, any type of career you wanted, what would you do?
Well, before I got a teaching job, and it was tough back then. I mean, there'd be like 300 people apply for a social studies job, maybe 10 today.
Yeah.
And so it was hard. So I subbed for a couple years and my first got on it all. Then I was a quarter time. And then the next year I was half time. Then I was three quarters. So it took me like 4 years to be a full-time teacher there. But I remember when the place that I worked, I worked on electrical and I worked up at Holscher Ag. And I remember, they told me I had to decide whether I was either going to, you know, either go teaching or if I was going to work there full time,
yeah,
I had to give up coaching. And that was like the end of my dream. And I remember driving down the road early in the morning. I decided I was going to do that because I was making really good money.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think like $1,000 because I was really good salesman.
Yeah.
And so I remember driving down the road and I just pulled over and I just sobbed.
Yeah.
Because it hit me. You're never going to work with any of those guys again.
Yeah.
And so I was just, I went back to the shop and I said, I can't do this.
Yeah. I got it.
I'm going to go, you know, I'll work part-time or whatever, no benefits, but I have to pursue this dream.
Yeah.
Cause, and that was just, that was a huge moment in my life where I knew this is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
And even though it looks bad right now, I'm just going to keep hammering away until I get my shot.
Yeah.
Did not see, you know, what was coming down the road with, you know, not being able to keep a high school going.
Sure.
But there's everybody has faced that throughout the state. It wasn't just Alden.
Absolutely.
That was kind of a tough thing for me. We went through a mascot change and then we ended up going together. And luckily for me, I had an opportunity to come over here and, you know, I've loved teaching here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've just always felt very welcome and, this has been a great place to teach and I've done well coaching. And so this is, I would have a hard time
picking any other career.
Right. I just can't see me doing something. I don't know what I would do. I maybe would do, you know, I'm getting too old for it now, but I maybe would do construction.
Yeah.
Not maybe the hardcore stuff because obviously my back surgery and everything, but
yeah. I'm telling you, home improvement TV show, that could be you.
Could be a podcast.
Yes, it could be a podcast. You could talk about the historical significance of these old homes and remodel them. But no, I think that's probably a pretty great answer when you think about it. That helps you know you're doing exactly what you were meant to do. And, you know, I would hate that if I asked that question right away, you were like, oh, I could tell you seven things I do. that probably means you didn't love it as much as you should. But
right.
No, I think that's a great answer. So we'll transition into the last question then. So what's your why? Why do you teach?
I think a big part of it is the challenge. Mm-hmm. And just like every teacher, I have things that I need to work on. Mm-hmm. I need to work better with people that don't want to work hard. I, I have a hard time with that.
Yeah.
But I love the relationships. And, you know, people always say, well, that's coaching. But in coaching, it's a different atmosphere. And you're with them a lot longer than, you know, today you can say that. In terms, you know, we got these 90-minute periods every day.
Yep.
But if that changes, you know, it's going to be a lot harder to do relationships if we're a day and then a day off and then a day. You're together every day in practice. And you develop, they learn about you.
Yeah.
And you learn about them. And you know what drives them. You learn, okay, I can hammer on this guy and he'll get way better. This one I cannot do that to because he'll run out crying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you get to know what things you have to do. I remember, I'll never forget that quote. You know, they always said, well, Vince Lombardi treats everybody the same like a dog. You know, and his wife said, that is so not true. He knew every single person what motivated them. And every person he knew, I can jump on this guy all day and he'll get nothing but better. This guy, I got to pump up.
Yeah.
And there's so many stories like that. You know, that one time where you walked in and you give him the old, you know, put the hand around the neck. That was a way in the 1960s that guys showed that they loved each other.
Yeah.
You know, in that way, a father-son kind of way. And that is always, to me, I mean, I get kind of emotional. I cry at every banquet, every spring.
I'm the same way.
No matter how hard I try.
I
try every year, I'm telling you.
I said this to one of my classes one day. We talked about, you know, can guys cry or whatever. And I said, guys, there hasn't been an end of the basketball season since I was a sophomore that I didn't cry. And I said, and that's every year. And I said, I think a lot of times it's because you invest so much and it's important to you. And then the relationships, I said, for me, a lot of times it's the fact that those seniors, you know, whether regardless of what happened, you're never going to coach them again. You know, you're just not going to have that connection. And that's always tough.
And for some reason, that pops into your mind right at the banquet.
Right at the banquet. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I never, you know, or they give you a nice gift or something because you're like, you've been avoiding it in your mind. Like, oh, man. I remember 2 years ago, last time we had a banquet, I never thought, man, I'm home free. I'm going to make it. First banquet I never cried at. And they brought this picture up, Niagara Falls. I was like this close to getting out of there.
Well, and that's, I think that's a good thing. You know,
oh, I do too.
It means you care about the kids and then they care about you, you know? And, I think if you're in a locker room at the end of the season or, you know, you're on the bus or at the banquet and there's a bunch of dry eyes, it probably wasn't that meaningful. And so if you do see some wet eyes, whether it's you or the kids, then that's a good thing. It meant that it was important to them too.
And they know.
Yeah.
I mean, this one thing you
can't fake it.
No, you can't fake it, you know, and I've seen that done before and the kids are like, really?
Yeah.
You know, because they know.
They're smart.
They know that you're trying, you know, especially, you know, for me, it's like they know I don't want to do this, but here it comes. You know, and just the I guess the intensity of it too. I mean, my God, it just gets so intense. And then I remember the first time we won the conference championship at Alden in track and field had been like 25 years. And it was something that as a program, we have just been striving for, for. And I remember I cried.
Yeah.
You know, I just stood up there and cried. And same thing when we won the state title in the 4x1. Yeah. It was like, okay, as a kid, I've been waiting for this moment my whole life. And it's right here. It's like a movie. It's like you're in a movie. It's so surreal. It's like, is this really happening? Mm-hmm. You know? And then you sit there and you think about all the things you did to try to get them to this point. And then they did it.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just like, I mean, that memory lives forever in your mind because you'll never get it out of your mind because it's so, I mean, it's so awesome.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's clear, you know, just talking with you, and obviously I knew this about you when I was your student and I knew it as a colleague, but know it even more now from our conversation, but it's clear you care about the kids that you teach and coach, you know, and if you're in this business and you don't, then you got to get to do it something else. And so I love to hear that from our teachers at our school. And I really want to thank you for coming on the podcast. This has been a lot of fun.
It has been a lot of fun.
Like you said, it's just, you know, it's just like a conversation at the lunch table. And You know, for you and I, sometimes that's you stopping by with some Casey's mini cookies. I'm trying to cut back in the new year, but
I know you're pretty disciplined. I got it.
I am. Last year I wasn't, but I'm trying to be disciplined this year. I probably always say yes to one, but thanks, Dave, for coming on. This has been really fun for me. And we hope everyone likes listening to the podcast. And like I said, if you got questions about all the high school football, World War I, World War II simulations, or Green Bay Packers, Dave Harms is your guy. Thanks for coming on, Dave.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Cadet Conversations and Coffee Podcast. I want to give a special shout out to junior Isabel Nicozzle, who created our awesome logo for the podcast, and freshman Val Hensley, who created all of our original music for the podcast. If you like what you hear, give us a like, follow, or subscription on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you next time.